Okay. Last week we learned the 51st perek of the Gvuras Hashem. We had jumped ahead a little bit because of Chag HaPesach Habo Aleinu L'Tova. So we wanted to take a couple of weeks to learn specifically elements of the Haggadah, not the general theme of Mitzrayim and Yetzias Mitzrayim of the Gvuras Hashem. So we've been learning the Maral's Pirush of the Haggadah, which, as we explained last week, is not found in the book of Seder Maral, which is called Haggadah Shel Pesach L'Maral Miprag, which is a forgery, but rather it is found in the latter Prakim of the Gvuras Hashem. So last week we learned Perek Nun Aleph, where he spoke about matzah, about Holach Ma'ani Adiacholu Avasona Bar the Mitzrayim, and the Maral offered his interpretation, which is creative and at variance with many others, that Holach Ma'ani Adiacholu Avasona Mitzrayim does not mean that we ate it when we were slaves in Mitzrayim, the bread of poverty we ate when we were slaves in Mitzrayim, but rather it was the simple bread that we ate on the way out of Mitzrayim. And it's called Lachma Anya not because of affliction, not because of poverty, but because of simplicity. And remember how he explained conceptually that to express it overly simply, the freedom is when life becomes more simple, less encumbered. And that's why the bread be'etzem, the bread was essentially simple and was essentially in that way suited for Geula. In Hadvar Marukim, it's a lot to talk about. We're not going to talk about it here. Now, I just want to say one concluding idea, which the Maral says in this perek as he goes on in Halach Ma'anya. And he says that when we get to the, after we make the introduction of Halach Ma'anya, the Achalu Avasana Varda Mitzrayim, so we say, called anybody who is hungry should come and eat, anybody who needs should come and have the Pesach. Called it Shrich Yese V'Yifsach. And then we say, Hashata Hocha, this year we're here, next year we'll be in Eretz Yisrael. Hashata Avdei, this year we are Avadim, next year we want to be in B'nei Chayrim. Next year we hope to be free. So what's the nature of this conclusion? So the Maral says, look, the first is, anybody who's hungry should come and eat. Anybody who's hungry anybody who's hungry should please again have a piece of cake. This is chametz. It's chametz. According to most opinions, it's chametz. So the first again is just an offer, a compassionate offer, which Maral doesn't really discuss. I would just, if I may, just put in that I always like to explain that there are two things we remember on Pesach. We remember Yitzias Mitzrayim, but we also remember Golus Mitzrayim. We remember the fact that we were taken out of Mitzrayim, but we also remember that we were in Mitzrayim. We're Maschil Bignos, as Mir Tashem we're going to discuss later this morning. We start by telling the low points of the story, and then we move to the higher points of the story. And certainly, not according to the Maral, but according to virtually everybody else, when we say Holach Ma'anya Diacholu Avasona Ba'ar de Mitzrayim, this is the bread of poverty that we ate when we were in the land of Mitzrayim, that's not remembering the bread of redemption, that's remembering the bread of slavery. That's remembering this is what we ate when we were Avodim. And in the Torah, when we speak about remembering Yitzias Mitzrayim, remembering Mitzrayim and Yitzias Mitzrayim. So again, we are very focused on the ritual mitzvahs, like mentioning it every day, like Pesach, where the focus seems to be on remembering the revelation of Hashem's power and Hashem's hand, which was there in the Geula, in the redemption. But in the Torah, more times than that, it tells you to remember that you were in Mitzrayim. Remember the slavery in Mitzrayim. Remember what you went through in Mitzrayim. And that's supposed to be something which builds our sensitivities. Because we know what it means to have been deprived, to have suffered, and therefore we should be that much more attuned to the suffering of others. So therefore, when we say this is the bread of poverty that we ate in Mitzrayim, and we remember that we were poor, so what is that supposed to move us to? What does the Torah say? that's supposed to move us to worrying about other people who are. So immediately our reaction is kol dichvid yesev yechol. Anybody who's hungry, we want to make sure they have what to eat. As we remember what we went through, so now we want to make sure that nobody else should have to go through the same thing. And therefore we invite those who are hungry to come and eat. I think Poshut Pshat, the Maral doesn't again dwell on it, and maybe it's consistent with the Maral, because the Maral says, Lachmani diachol av son of Arda Mitzrayim, doesn't have to do with poverty per se, and doesn't have to do with our slavery. As we explained, the Maral says it's simple bread, and it's symbolic of gula, of redemption. So therefore he doesn't note this transition. But the Maral goes on and says that there are two statements. Again, one is a simple humanitarian statement. Anybody who is hungry should come and eat. And the other one is more of a halachic statement. Called Tzrich Yeseh V'Yiftach. Anybody who needs should come and join us for the Pesach, which means that there are halachos, mitzvos that have to be accomplished here. Especially, what's mentioned here is the mitzvah of the Korban Pesach. Somebody had to be a partner in a Korban Pesach. If somebody needs to, let them come and let us join us for the Pesach, for the Korban Pesach. And again, that's a halachic need rather than just simply a physical, you know, human need. Eino ra'ev, says the Maral. He's not hungry like the first guy. So he says he needs to fulfill the mitzvahs of Pesach, and he doesn't have the option to do so. So we say we invite him to do so. And says the Maral, when we say that, that leads to the next statement. Right? Of course, Yeseh V'Yifsach can mean to bring the Korban Pesach. You know, much of the discussion which people will sometimes have about this is that it's really too late to invite somebody to join you for the Korban Pesach at this point in time, because he had to be min ha-minuyim. He had to be counted in at the time when the Pesach was geshachten, was slaughtered, which was earlier in the day. Of course, also, it's not much of an invitation when you're sitting at the Seder table with the door closed to invite the hungry to come and eat either. And presumably, this is something of an announcement which a person would make in Seven Mile Market, right, or at Shul, you know, whatever it is, and be inviting people earlier that we put at the front end of the Haggadah too. But the example, by the way, in the Gemara is, the Gemara where this comes from, the Gemara in Tainus, I believe, about one of the Amoraim who used to stand by, you know, who used to go out and say, Kol Dichvin Yeseh V'Yechol, nothing to do with Pesach, just generally that's what he would say. So again, back to the ranch. Here, where we speak about halachic needs, and who anybody who needs will try to help them, says Maral, so then we recall that, you know, sometimes somebody could need to do a mitzvah, want to do a mitzvah, but not have in their ability to do so. And now that you mention it, that's all of us. Because we need to bring a Korban Pesach, and we're not in a position to do so. Because Hashata, Hacha, because we're not in Eretz Yisrael, because even if we were in Eretz Yisrael, Hashata Avdei, we still don't have the full independence to be able to build a Beis HaMikdash that we would want to have. So we say, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu has this principle with mitzvahs, which is that if a person wants to do a mitzvah, but v'nenas v'lo yasa, due to circumstances beyond his control, he's unable to do that mitzvah, so then it's considered as if he did it. So we say as well, right, Rabbanu Shalom, we're also called a tzrich. We also need to fulfill the mitzvah. And here we are, we're inviting people to come and do the mitzvahs with us. We can offer them matzah, we can offer them maror, but we can't offer them the Korban Pesach. We're also stuck that we're not able to do so. So therefore we say, Rabbanu Shalom, you understand, we can't do it. We don't have it in our ability to do it. So let it be considered in a significant way as if we did do it. So when we express the hope and the yearning that we want to be free and we want to be in Eretz Yisrael and we want to be able to bring the Korban Pesach, so we transform ourselves from just people who aren't doing the mitzvah to people who would love to do the mitzvah but due to circumstances beyond our control are unable to do the mitzvah. And that's a whole different story. And of course you know that that hope is not just expressed here, but it's expressed several times in the Haggadah. One could say it's expressed from the beginning until the end of the Haggadah, because Chasal Sidur Pesach is essentially the end of the Haggadah, besides the songs at the end, which are of a different vintage. Chasal Sidur Pesach is Kasher Zochinu L'Sadei Reisoi Kein Nizkei La'Asoisoi. Right? We should be able to do it properly, Yemirtz Hashem, L'Shana Haba B'Yerushalayim. So as much as we celebrate the Pesach as fulfillment, we also recognize what we're not able to do. Right? We are graciously inviting people to participate in our Seder, but we realize that what we are offering is a reduced product. We turn to the Rabbanu Shel Olam and we ask him that we should be able to do what he ultimately would want us to do. And again, by wanting it, then it's something that Nebuch we can't do, as opposed to just being not aware of it at all. And the Maral, ends, speaking, again, there's so many classic questions here on the, right? We say, Hashata Hacha. What language is that? That's Aramaic. L'shana Abba. What language is that? Hebrew. Right? Now we say, Ba'aradi Yisrael, which is Aramaic. Right? But we say, L'shana Abba. Hashata Avde. Now we are slaves, Aramaic. L'shana Abba. B'nei Chayrin. Now, B'nei Chayrin is in itself also, it's Mishnaic. It's not Aramaic per se. But why the transition in language? Right? Now, so some would say, of course, that when you're going from Golos to Geula, you're going from Aramaic to Hebrew. Right? That's a simple pshat, which is said in the Veltus, and it's very, very, very simple and straightforward. Simple and straightforward pshat. However, the Maral says something else, and he says that the term shana. What's the term shana?
Change her
name. Okay, so shana. There are multiple uses of the term lishana. You could say lishanein is to repeat till it becomes fluent, right? Avar v'shana. Shana is to do it again, and in a sense, therefore, shana is to repeat. It's another cycle, another year. But shana also comes from the term to be mishana, to change. Right? To do it a second time is different, right? The number two, echad, rishon, sheni, echad, shnayim, that's, again, a concept which we speak about in Maralian terms a lot, but it goes, just basically, when you have two things, you have one over here and one over there, they're different than each other. And a shana is indeed supposed to be a world of difference. There's an aspect that each year brings with it shinui. It's not just each year is same old, another thing, another beginning. Here, another cycle. Here we go again. And because the term shana has in it the notion of shinui, so therefore, when it speaks about the hoped for change in our circumstances, from being here to being in Eretz Yisrael, from being Avodim to being Bnei Chayrin, so the term which we use is Lishana Haba. Lishana Haba. It's just a simple thought, but just think about it. What's the song which you sing at the most, right? Okay, Manashtana is an example again of using Shana as different. But when you sing Lishana Haba, Lishana Haba, Lishana Haba, Birushalayim. So now, when you say Lishana Haba Yerushalayim, you say, it should be different, we should be in Yerushalayim. Lishana Haba, we're, that in itself, the terminology itself, is a indication of our pining for a changed circumstance. Lishana Haba, changes are coming. That's, in a certain sense, the way the Maral would translate Lishana Haba. And that's why he says we use the Hebrew, because only in the Hebrew do you have that expression. In Aramaic, what do we say? Lashata right? It doesn't have that rich connotation. That's what the Maharal explains. Very beautiful little thing there. Okay.
Well, there are other parts also in Hebrew. That's not the only phrase that's Hebrew, is it? Yeah.
Holach ma'ani diachalu avasana ba'ara de Mitzrayim, Aramaic. Kol dechini yisei v'yecho, kol dechuch yisei v'yisach, Aramaic. Hashata hocha, l'shana haba ba'ara de Yisrael. Two Hebrew words. Hashata avde, l'shana haba. Again, b'nei chayrin is sort of, it can go either way. Chayrin is not the language of the pasuk, but it's l'shana haba. That's the phrase. That's the phrase which is Hebrew. And again, one can understand simply because it's the language of Geula is Lashon Kodesh. But on the other hand, again, the Maharal says it's the term Lashon Haba itself. To change, things are changing. Okay, that basically, he brings, by the way, a sort of what you would call a very practical approach, which some says which he doesn't like at all. And he says that the reason why they said in Lashon HaKodesh is because it's not friendly. If their Persian hosts were listening at the door and they would say, oh, we can't wait to get out of here, right? So then it wouldn't play so well. You know, that was one of the big things, was that when we were learning the life of Rav Shamshon Vel Hirsch last summer, so it was one of the things one of the things which happened in Germany in the time of reform was that which Rav Shamshon Vel Hirsch had a long essay about, was that one of the temples made Tisha B'Av into tuxedo night as they celebrated the fact that they didn't want to get, you know, once upon a time Jews were persecuted, they weren't at home in their land, and therefore they yearned for freedom to be able to go away to a place where they could be truly comfortable. But thank God the Jews of Germany knew very well they were very comfortable in their land, and they were right at home. They were right at home there, and therefore they said, instead of making it dark in the building on Tisha B'Av, we're going to make it blazing, beautiful lights, and everybody come dressed up in their holiday best, and you know it's all going to be done nicely and good, and so Rav Shamshon Vel Hirsch, and part of it of course was classic Jewish self consciousness. It wasn't part of it was that they were very comfortable. Part of it was they didn't want their hosts to feel like they didn't like them. You know, same reason why the Zionist movement was very not popular amongst the Reform, even in this country, for a long time. They took away. Why do you want to get out of here? Right? This is the greatest place in the world. So says the Maharal. There are those who say that that's why that's in the Haggadah, that they said it in Hebrew, because if they said it in the vernacular, so then the people would hear and realize what they were saying, and therefore they said it in Lashon HaKodesh. But says Maharal, that can't be, because then it would have said Lashon HaBa Be'eretz Yisrael. It wouldn't have said Lashon HaBa Be'ara De Yisrael, because they're switching back and saying it in Aramaic, in the land of Yisrael, which gives it away. So therefore, he says it doesn't, you know, that's not what it is. This is not because of the tzenzora. This is not because of the censors. Okay. The Perek Chav Beis, the 52nd chapter of the Gvuras Hashem, moves on past Halach Ma'anya. What happens after Halach Ma'anya, according to Mara, is Eikrin HaShulchan, they would take away the table. Again, that was when they were lying on lounges where they did real mesubin, and the table was a little table which sat in front of each person separately, and it was the kind of thing that you pick up and take away. Don't try to take away the dining room table in the middle of the Seder. You will have some very unhappy people and a very bad back. So we don't do this anymore. Instead of Akiras HaShulchan, so what do people do? So the maximum that people do is that they actually take away the matzahs. And what many people just do is we just cover the matzahs, uncover the matzahs. That's the extent of Akiras HaShulchan that we do. And what we're really trying to show is, hold on, we're not eating. We're not eating. We have a lot to talk about. Okay, so here's the bread. haha, tricked you. And I'm going to cover it up again. And the idea is, not so fast. We're not going anywhere very fast. And that's supposed to really get the discussion going, which of course happens with manishtana. Manishtana. We pour the kaisheni, we pour the second cup. Everybody's used to kiddush, and then the meal. Here's kiddush, and then one second, another kiddush. No, we have more to say. And the Haggadah is supposed to be said al hayayin, over the wine. We don't hold the wine the entire time that we're saying the Haggadah, but when we're going to come to the conclusion, certain high points, we hold a cup of wine, when we're praising Hashem, and then when we come to the bracha on the Haggadah, the concluding bracha, Asher Goalonu V'Goalas Aviseinu V'Mitzrayim, the bracha of the redemption of Goal Yisrael, we again take the cup of wine, and then we drink the cup of wine. But meanwhile, after pouring the cup of wine, we start with the manishtana. So what are the classic issues that we have with the manishtana? We'll get in here what we can. Maral, this is really, again, it's a running commentary. And here he's going to teach us some little bits of perspective. And Amir Hashem, hopefully before we finish, we'll have a chance to move on to what he speaks about a little bit later, which is going to be not just running commentary, but another yesod, another core principle. What's the issue? What's one of the classic issues with the manishtana is that the questions are asked, why is this night different than all other nights that we're eating matzah, and that we're eating moror, and that we're leaning, and that we're having we're dipping twice? When do we answer these questions? Right, that's the classic question. When do we answer these questions? Another classic question is, why do we ask these questions and we don't ask other questions, such as, why do we drink four cups of wine? Actually, we just poured a second cup of wine, so why don't we ask the question, why don't we drink arba kaisis? So I want to say the Maral's explanation for the second question first. The Maral holds that we only ask the questions about things which at the core are D'oraisa, our Torah commandments. That's what these questions are focused on. So it's focused on matzah, which is a Torah commandment. It's focused on moror, which at least at the time of the Beis Hamikdash was a Torah commandment. It focuses on heseba, on leaning, which even though it's not a Torah commandment to lean, but we lean while we fulfill the Torah commandments, which are the focal point. We lean while we eat matzah. And it focuses on the tibul, the dipping, because again we dip the more, which is the deiraisis. So the main focus is on the deiraisis. And it makes sense that it should be that way. It makes sense that it should be that way. We explained last week that the magid starts with ho lach ma'anya, this is the bread of poverty, the bread of oinim olav dvarim harbe, because the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim is not said as just tell a story. The mitzvah is said as explain the mitzvahs that you're doing. When the Torah tells us the mitzvah of telling the story, it's always in response to a question, why are you doing this? Why are you doing that? Why do we do this on Pesach? That's the way the Torah says it. It's all explanations of the mitzvahs. And therefore, the Seder must have that element where somebody says, well, why are we doing this mitzvah? Manishtana. So we start the Haggadah, as we said last week, by Holach Manya, here's the mitzvah. And by the way, remember, the bread is the one mitzvah d'oraisa that we still have. The Torah, right? Moror is only a Torah commandment together with the Korban Pesach, and we don't have the Korban Pesach altogether. And therefore, the Moror, which we have, is only d'rabbanan. But matzah is also an independent mitzvah. Well, you're supposed to eat it with the Pesach, but there's also a separate mitzvah of Be'erev Teichlu Matzah. So this is the mitzvah around which our discussion is really going to be focused. However, on the other hand, we do have room for discussion of all the mitzvahs d'oraisa, and manishtana focuses on our fulfillment of all the mitzvahs d'oraisa. Yes, it goes beyond the halachos, which are d'oraisa, because haseba, leaning, may not be a d'oraisa, but nevertheless, it is still done in the kiyum, in the fulfillment of a d'oraisa. Okay, so that's number one, and therefore again, that's what this is really a discussion about. Since that's the way the mitzvah Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim is generated. Yeah, we do all kinds of other things. Right? We don't ask, why do we take away the table? Because that's not a D'oraisa. Even though that's really supposed to be the first question, which gets the whole ball rolling. Why are we pouring Kosh Sheni? Why are we pouring a second cup of wine? Again, that's supposed to get the whole ball rolling. But where is it supposed to roll? Where do you want the ball in the end? You want the ball in the end as the discussion of the mitzvahs D'oraisa. I want to talk about the matzah. I want to talk about the mora. I want to talk halavai about the Pesach. That's what you want to talk about. There are things which we do. Right? The Gemara asks, why do we have two tibulin? Why do we have karpas? What's the answer that the Gemara gives? Why do we have karpas?
So, you should ask.
So that the kids should ask. Meaning what? That it's a meaningless ritual? Okay, so look, once we did it, we didn't say do jumping jacks. Right? We said take a vegetable and dip it in salt water and tears and karpas is perach and samach ribo. Right? All the divrei Torah that they send the fourth graders home from, or first graders home from school with, and they're all true and they're all meaningful and they're all part of it, but they didn't invent the ritual because of that. They invented the ritual so that we do strange things, so that people start asking questions. And once they start asking questions, even about things which aren't so inherently meaningful, the juices begin to flow. And they'll start to ask about the things we really want to discuss. And so the Maharal says, you have to understand that the real answer here is, I mean, the Maharal has two things which he says are the real answer, and one is clearly is that we do answer the question. Because at the end of the Haggadah, we say, Rabban Gamliel said that you must say these three things. Why do we eat the Pesach? We eat the Pesach for this reason. Why do we eat the Matzah? For this reason. Why do we eat the Mora? For this reason. That's really where Manishtan is all oriented towards. There are three Torah commandments of performance. Pesach, Matzah, and Mora. And those are the things that we have to explain. And that's what the Manishtana is oriented around. Yes, once we speak about dipping the mora, which the mora is the oraisa, we say, well, we actually dip twice. But once we speak about eating the matzah, we speak about the fact that we lean when we eat the matzah. But it's all really to be about these mitzvahs. So that's what the Manishtana is focused on. The Arba Kaisais is a very nice thing. It's a beautiful thing. But if a person spend the night discussing why we have Arba Kaisais, they didn't do what the Torah said. The Torah said you have to spend the night explaining why you have matzah and why you have mor and why you have Pesach, the things which the Torah itself created and legislated. Arba Kaisais, excuse the expression, I mean, I don't want to, I probably shouldn't say it today, but like the Torah never heard of. The Torah didn't, HaKadosh Baruch Hu taught Moshe Rabbeinu, whatever. You know, but I'm saying it's not something which appears in the Torah at all. And therefore, for the discussion to go there is not the purpose. Yes, we pour a second cup of wine, which is supposed to stimulate the question, why are you doing that? But in the scripted questions, not the spontaneous questions, which are supposed to get the juices flowing, but the scripted questions focus on the Torah commandments, because the Torah commandment of discussing Yetzias Mitzrayim is to discuss those. The Maral, I just will mention one nekudala, one little point, which is that he says, and where is Haseba, however, explained? Where is leaning explained? He says, it is it. We do explain it. Right there at Rav Gamliel. After Rav Gamliel, what do we say? V'chol dar v'dar chayav adam lirais es atzma kilu hu yotza atzma mitzrayim. Kilu yotza mitzrayim. In every generation, a person has to view himself as if he left Mitzrayim. Right? You say that, that's again one of the themes that's said a couple of times in the Haggadah. In each and every generation, a person has to view himself as if he left Mitzrayim. You know, the Rambam has a slightly different version of that text. Excuse me for a second while I find you the Rambam. Thank you. B'chol dar v'dar, in each and every generation, I'm reading you from the Rambam, in Hilchos Chametz U'Matzah, Perek Zayin, Halacha Vav. Okay, and what he says here is interesting, because the Rambam at the end of Hilchos Pesach publishes a Nusach HaAgoda, and at least in the classic version of the Rambam, this, his girsa is exactly the way we say it. B'chol dar v'dar chayav liray sasatzmein. Each generation person has to view himself as if he left Mitzrayim. But in the halachas, the Rambam says, B'chol dar v'dar chayav adam laharos es atzmoy. A person has to show himself, not see himself, but show himself, kiluhu ba'atzmoy yotza atam yishivud Mitzrayim, as if he himself left now from the slavery of Mitzrayim. Right? And he says, as it says, and he brings the psukim, lefikach, and therefore he continues in halacha zayin, therefore, kishesoyed adam b'layla hazeh, tzorech lishtoy, lechol v'lishtoy v'meisav derecheirus. That's the obligation of Haseba. The obligation of Haseba is to show that you left Mitzrayim, to show freedom. V'cholechad v'echad b'nashim chayev lishtoy v'layla hazeh arba kaysha shal yayin. And for the same reason, everybody has to drink 4 cups of wine, because when you are free, the wine flows. So that's all a kiyum of chayev adam laharos es atzmoy, of showing as if you left Mitzrayim. And so, says the Maral, when it says in the Haggadah, after Rabbi Gamliel explains Pesach, Matzah, and Morer, so it answers the question, why tonight are we eating Matzah? Why tonight are we eating Morer? And it also says the next paragraph says every generation you have to show yourself as if you left Mitzrayim. That's why we are reclining. Now that's the answer, he says, to that question.
Does Rambam say Laharos is the Girsa of the Haggadah?
No, that's what I'm pointing out to you. Is at least in the old one. And the truth is, I don't remember if in the newer Rambams where they have updated texts, whether it changes it in the Nusach Haggadah, I don't remember. But it's very striking in the halacha where he's b'chol dar v'dar chayav liray sasatzmoy is in the Mishnah, right? And it's becomes part of the text of the Haggadah. That when he brings it as a halacha, he says it a little differently than when it's brought in the text of the Haggadah. And that's evidently the way he understood it, either way. And we understand, of course, that the tibulin is also part of that. The tibulin is a demonstration of, fancy people don't just have carrots; they have carrots with dressing. That's part of the hayrois, the demonstration of cheirus. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Is that
cheirus laharos? Yes. He brings it from the psukim. Vayisanu ha'itzim misham. There's a big discussion about Haseba. And how it works, because that lemaisa we say that if a person ate, now we're more lenient because haseba for us is not our derecheirus, is not our way of freedom, but if a person ate or drank without haseba, we would tell him that he has to repeat it, right? Meikra din. That's what's so this is a big debate. Exactly what is it? Is it a tanai in the mitzvah? Is it a mitzvah for itself? There's a lot of lamdus, a lot of analysis of this idea. But it's certainly a kiyum of a deraisa. Even though the Torah may not prescribe specifically that the way you fulfill this is by leaning, but a person fulfills a deraisa by doing it that way. Okay, so that's yes.
There's no mention of the Sibur Yetzias Mitzrayim in the Manishtam. That is one of the mitzvahs d'oraisa.
Because that is the Manishtam. In other words, the Manishtam is the Sibur Yetzias Mitzrayim. The d'oraisa is to discuss the mitzvahs d'oraisa of action with explanation, which is Sibur Yetzias Mitzrayim. Okay. Somebody's waiting there for me. Just don't be another 15 minutes. Somebody's waiting. Okay. Okay. Now. of course, what this does is it postpones the answer to the question of Manishtana for a while, right? Here you ask the question of Manishtana, then we start discussing Avodim Hayinu Lefarei B'Mitzrayim, and only later do we come back and explain. Okay, only later do we come back and really explain, you know, plug them into each other, which of course is again part of the beauty of the structure of the Haggadah, that we start off just telling the story freely, and then we say, okay, now let's use that story to plug it back into the mitzvahs. And if we don't plug it back into the mitzvahs, then we have not fulfilled our obligation. However, the Maharal then offers a second way of viewing it. And he says, you don't need this, v'ein kasha, and it's not a problem. Ki mamar manishtana hu mamir talmud chacham. He says the manishtana is a statement of a scholar. Right? It's not just a statement of a child. And this is one of the dynamics that a person has to work on at the Seder. So, you know, there's the questions of the chachamim, there's the questions of the children, and you know, arba bonim, and everybody according to their level. Manishtana is our questions. It says, and he says, Manishtana lazim kaleos. Why this script? Right. So we know, according to our discussions which we've had here so far, is that look, whatever questions there are, you have to end up with questions about the mitzvahs, the main mitzvahs of the night, about the mitzvahs d'oraisa. But the Maharal just looks at it from the language of the Mishnah, where it says, the Brice, I think, a wise man, his son asks him, if not, his wife asks him, and even two Torah scholars who are sitting together, and so to speak, they know all the answers, they ask each other, Manishtana alayla zemikol alaylas. So it's phrased almost in the context of a Talmud Chacham. So, what's his question? So says the Maharal, what his question is that, look, I understand that matzah is to remember that we were taken out of Mitzrayim. I understand that mor is to remember that we were slaves in Mitzrayim. However, he asks, Ma inyan zelonu, ki ma korolonu sho'esim hacheres v'ashibud v'ezeh mokam hayazeh. So, excuse me, I'm sorry, I overstated it. He understands that matzah is a bread which is associated with freedom, and mor is bitterness, but he says, but what's it about? Where did it come from? In other words, the unintelligent person says, what's matzah? What's mor? Right? The chacham understands what matzah is, understands what mor is, but wants to know, what are we commemorating through it? Of course, the questions presume that the person has to be told about Yetzias Mitzrayim. They may not be, of course, fully ignorant of it, but we're acting as if we are. But they understand at least what the dimensions of it are. And so, the answer to the question is the history. We were slaves to Paro Mitzrayim. That's the bitterness that we're talking about. Hashem took us out from there. That's the freedom that we are referring to. That's what he says, and you know, there's a famous commentary again from the Abarbanel. Abarbanel says that the Manishtana is really five questions. The four questions plus the introductory question, which is why is this night different than all other nights? Now, what does that mean? It's really one question. I was rather than saying it's five questions, one question with four subcategories, which is I'm confused. Are we celebrating slavery or are we celebrating freedom? Right? We're having things which are bitter. We're having matzah, which is lechamayni. On the other hand, we lean, we dip. You know, we have things which are freedom. So, like, what's going on over here? And the answer is, we were slaves and we were redeemed, and we're trying to remember both sides of the equation. So, to some degree, Avodim Hayinu is not a diversion. It's a direct answer regarding the question. The way the Haggadah works, and this is again part of the complications that we try to work out, and it's, you know, the ambiguity is in itself rich to leave room for all of these things, is that yes, to some degree, we're telling here, this is the story. And, you know, again, if you're a chacham and you understand what these things are and you're just asking what it's commemorating, so then the answer, Avraham Avinu, is the whole answer. If you have no clue, then Avraham Avinu is beginning, starting from the very beginning, and in the end, Rav Gamliel will come and say, and that's what matzah means, and that's what morah means, and now that you know the story itself. Okay. So, let's now move on in our the last little segment here that we have, last opportunity we have over here in the shir, to speak about Maschil v'gnus u'masayim b'shevach. So speak about how the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim is in itself told. And there is a fundamental machlokes which we have. The Mishnah says that you begin with gnus, you begin with the negative, and masayim b'shevach, you end with the positive. In this telling the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim, you go through the whole story, through the process, from the lows to the highs. And in the Gemara, there's an argument between Rav and Shmuel. Rav said that you start from Avodim Hayinu, and Shmuel said you start from Mitchila Avdei Avodah Zarah. Excuse me, the other way around. Rav said you start from Mitchila Avdei Avodah Zarah Hayu Aviseinu. Rav says you start from the fact that we were slaves to Paro in Egypt, and Shmuel says we start from the fact that once upon a time, I mixed it up again. Rav says we start from when once upon a time we were idol worshippers before Avraham. We go way back to before Avraham Avinu. And of course, as you know, in our Haggadah, we include both. Right after Manashtana, we say Avodim Hayinu L'Paro B'Mitzrayim V'Yotzienu, and shortly afterwards, after we go through the Arbabonim and all the other nice stuff which we end up spending three quarters of the time on, the introductions, we go to start to tell the story, and we start back with Mitchila Avdei Avodah Zarah Hayu Aviseinu. So we have to understand both the assumption that you're supposed to start with the negative and go to the positive, and this debate about what does it mean to start with the negative. What is the frame of reference for this whole discussion? That's what we have to discuss and to explain. So, a couple of things. First of all, as we suggested before, remembering the difficulty is also a very celebrated value in Jewish life. Because when you remember the difficulty, then you will be able to help other people facing similar difficulties. You have a greater appreciation for the good that you have, and that's why we have all those mitzvahs. That's why, as we said, after we say Alach Ma'anya, we say Kol Dechvin Yeseh V'Yechol. Anybody who is hungry should come and eat. And that's part of what has to be learned. By the way, I believe that this is why there's a special emphasis on Pesach of Kimcha de Pischa, that we give money for the poor to help them make Pesach. It's really an obligation every yontif. But there's no yontif where it gets as much attention as Pesach. And I think because Pashut, a large part of our sensitivity to matters of charity, the Torah says, should come from our experience of Mitzrayim. So if we weren't Maschil Vignus, if we didn't tell the difficulty, we would be missing half the story. We'd be missing half of what we're supposed to take home from Yetzias Mitzrayim. It's not just the Emunah, it's the sensitivity. Number one. Number two is, as the Maral explains, that, I'm going to say something really before the Maral explains it, but that really, sometimes in order to really understand something, you have to be able to see contrast. You have to see contrast. And the nature of it is that way. In order to appreciate the Shevach, if we're going to celebrate, tonight, remember, it's not the anniversary of Golus Mitzrayim, it is the anniversary of Geulas Mitzrayim. Someone might say, you know, it's very nice, this idea, we remember that you were in Mitzrayim, but maybe that you should do for other days of the year. On Pesach, it's when we left Mitzrayim. But of course, you can only appreciate what you, you know, the greatness of leaving if you are cognizant of what the matzav, what the situation was before. And so you have to be maschil b'gnus in order that the shevach should be able to be more complete, in order to be able to achieve it, the contrast. And I would just say, I think this is an important thing. In a sense, that's the methodology as well of telling the story. You ask a question and you give an answer. You know, we have a custom here. On Friday night, I ask a question in shul. I think it's a good thing. Excuse me for saying so. That's something which I'm proud of, but I'm proud of it. I think it's a good thing. Why? Because I can get up Friday night and in the same 3 minutes or 4 minutes, I can tell you, I can say a Dvar Torah. Say, you know, this is a lesson to learn from the Parsha. And what will happen? So for some people, maybe the Dvar Torah will make an impression, for some people it won't. But it's another thought. If you ask a question and you leave an open question, then what happens is, you know, to the extent that it's successful, it bothers you. And when you have a question which bothers you, so then, number one, you're going to spend time on your own searching for the answer. But number two, even if you just get the answer at Shal Shudas, you know, here in Shul, but the answer comes to fill a void. To fill a void. It's always important, right? If you want learning to stick, so what does it say? You're supposed to learn where your heart desires. There's something which you're interested in. There's something which you're curious about. So we could sit down at the Seder and we could say, okay, let me explain why you're doing everything. And we'll explain it. Fine, dandy, gewaldic. But what we really want to do is we want to create a hole. We want to create a curiosity. We say, I don't understand. I don't know why we're doing this. I don't know why we're doing that. And then the information comes to fill a void. And you appreciate it sort of in contrast. I'll tell you the way Rav Tzadik says it. I love the way Rav Tzadik says it. The way Rav Tzadik says it is that when a person has a question and they're troubled by the question, it's like they themselves are imprisoned by the question. And then when they get the answer, it's in itself Chayev Adam Lireis Es Atzmei Kilu Yotzam Mitzrayim. You're in self experiencing a form of bondage and liberation from the bondage. The idea of contrast, if we're just going to say, you know, we left Mitzrayim, it was amazing. But if you go and you tell the story and you put people into the place, you put yourself into the place of remembering what it was like to be in Mitzrayim, and then, you know, then you can, how do you spell relief? You know, it's like, it's fantastic. It feels so much better, the answer that fills a void. Maral says two further nakudos here. And one nakuda, one point which he says, is that Yitzias Mitzrayim is here to be able to demonstrate the tremendous gift which HaKadosh Baruch Hu did to us when he took us out of Mitzrayim. And he says that, you know, sometimes there are two kinds of things which happen. There are two kinds of pe'ulos. And yesh shnei pe'ulim. Ha'echad u'pe'ul b'mikra v'asheni u'pe'ul b'etzem. There's something which, so to speak, happens and does it, has its effect by chance. And there's another that has it essentially in a much more in a much more directed way. What's the example? He says there could be Rachmana Litzlan, a house on fire, and then it rains and it puts out the fire. So the rain put out the fire, right? It accomplished putting out the fire, but the rain wasn't intending to put out the fire. It rained, and so the fire went out. And on the other hand, is a person sees Rachman al-Islam, this house on fire, and he goes and he runs and he puts it out. And that is something which is intended and directed and therefore much more meaningful. And so he says that by setting it up and explaining all of the difficulty which the Jewish people particularly were in And then in that framework, coming and explaining how the Geula worked, you see the Geula as being something which is that much more directed. If I may bring a mushel, or not a mushel, but an illustration of this, there's an amazing thing that the Ramban writes in Parshas Vayigash. Beautiful thing. Pashut, beautiful, and instructive. Avram Avinu was how old when he had Yitzchak? He was 100 years old. His wife was 90. It was a big miracle, right? One of the most heralded miracles in the Torah. We read about it on Rosh Hashanah. How old was Yecheved when she gave birth to Moshe? 130. In fact, even her earlier, it was her third child. But her oldest was Miriam. How old was she when she gave birth to Miriam? 124. Miriam was 3 years older than Aaron, who was 3 years older than Moshe. So, question is, if that's true, why doesn't the Torah say it? In fact, the Torah seems to say the opposite. Vayelech ish min beis Levi, vayikach es bas Levi. You know, like a little girl, like a young woman. What are you talking about? So, looks like the veterans. The Ibn Ezra, actually, as a result of this, says, nah, what are you talking about? She wasn't 130. If she was 130, the Torah would have said that she was 130. Ibn Ezra was skeptical sometimes of these Midrashi Chazal. Ramban says, no, she was 130. She was exactly. I mean, it's brought up in Parshas Vayigash because that's where they went down to Mitzrayim, and there's a question of the 70 souls. How do you count the 70? So we say Yocheved was born just as they were coming into Mitzrayim. Yocheved is the mother of Moshe Rabbeinu. The Jewish people left Mitzrayim 210 years later. Right? That means if Yocheved was born when she came into Mitzrayim, she was 130 when she gave birth to Moshe, because Moshe was 80 when the Jewish people left Mitzrayim. Just simply do the math. Says Ramban, did you ever hear of Babe Ruth? No, I'm sorry, that's not what the Ramban says, but he says basically something like that. He says, you know, Babe Ruth, what is he famous for? He's famous for two things, almost equally. One is for hitting 714 home runs, right? He's a big home run slugger. But he's at least as famous for one of those home runs. And what was that? The ostensible, hotly debated, but the ostensible called shot. Right? He went up to the plate and he pointed his bat, according to the way people thought, out to a certain spot in the left center field. And right, the guy pitches the ball and he socked it and he hit it right there to that spot. And that's Babe Ruth's called shot. And if a home run is godless, is great, but where you say, I'm going to do it like that, and he drills it right to that spot, that's exponentially greater. That's amazing. Says the Ramban, nobody ever came and said, Yocheved, you're going to have a child in a year, when she was 123 years old and praying desperately for a child. If that did happen, it doesn't say it anywhere in the Torah. That's not the drama. It was not a called shot. It says miracles happened very often, and the Torah doesn't report on them. Some of them we know from the Midrashim, and some of them we don't know from the Midrashim. Midrashim don't even report. But what the Torah reports are where it was a called shot, where the Navi said, the Malach came and said, you will have a child, and I'm telling you when. I'm telling you this is how it's going to be and this is what it's going to be. And then it happens. That is an ois not only of the power of Hashem, but also of the controlled power of Hashem, right? Babe Ruth was a power hitter. He put 714 balls over the fence, right? But if this is the real thing, right? So then it's not just power, it's control, it's, you know, the ability to determine, and so on and so forth. That's what we're talking about. That's proving Nevuah and Koach Hashem and all of these things together there at once. And that's the idea. in order to see the real demonstration of the hand of Hashem, we have to take it out of Mikra, out of something which happened, to see it as something which was the smart bomb, which was directed so perfectly and correctly. And so, when you first lay out, okay, this was the situation, you can see that in contrast. You could see that, excuse me, as coming mamish to directly fill the needs, fill the voids. The second thing that the Maral says is that Hashavach shekodem leignus yoser shavach kama shetira kayem kodem lehalayla zemipneki hashlemus einanimtza bahascholosa b'olam hazeh. He says the second thing is that we have to understand that it is endemic, it is inherent to that which is really good in the world, that it doesn't just come that way. That's the world the way we have it. Once upon a time there was a world that just came that way, and that was Adam in Gan Eden. And what did he do? He forfeited it. And instead, what do we have? We have instead a very gradual process to develop into something which is good, which is mature, which is strong. In the world, certainly the world outside of Gan Eden, you start off Ra min Urav, deficient, and you develop and you grow into something. Things which are great don't start simply that way. And so we always have this notion of the chashoicha, the nahira migai chashoicha, the light that comes from the midst of darkness. We've learned about this idea in the Maral before. Maral, for example, when we speak about Netzach Yisrael, in the Netzach Yisrael, when he speaks about David HaMelech and Malchus, how it came from, in fact, very dark beginnings. Because the greatest things have to be developed and have to be able to grow in order for them to become something. And so, any great Mila starts with Genus, and it grows into it. And so, that's what we're describing here, this process of Maschil Bignus, Umesayim B'Shevach, of starting with the negative and going towards the positive. The Maral himself sides with the in explaining this, and I'm just going to wrap up with it quickly. Maral goes with the classic approach, which is found already much earlier than him, that the Machlai Ritva is that Maschil, what's the Machlaikis of Mitchila Avdei Aved Zara Hayu Aveseinu, what is the, so again there's a debate. Rav says you start with the fact that we were idol worshippers. Terach, the father of Avram, was an idol worshipper, and then we came to the service of Hashem. And Shmuel says we say we were slaves to Paro in Egypt, and then we were taken out from there. So the Maral entertains the possibility that the question is whether we should be saying the narrow story of Mitzrayim or the broader history of the Jewish people. But he's not inclined to that. What he's inclined to is that the debate is, are we discussing the physical or are we discussing the spiritual? Avodim Hayinu, we were slaves, is physical bondage. And liberation is physical freedom. Mitarach was a wealthy, prominent man. He did not suffer physically. Somebody told me, I was once sitting next to the chief chaplain of the National Guard on an airplane, and he told me that he used to take busloads of soldiers on their off days to Ur, or Kazdim, to Avram's birthplace, and they have there a huge house which they unearthed, which has on it markings of the House of Terach, which I'm not sure if it's not like a museum that was constructed 2,000 years ago to Terach, but whatever it is, they believe that it is the house of, that it was the house. It has all kinds of names on it, which are biblical names and so on and so forth. And he would take it to show it to them, and he said it's huge. By those standards, it was huge. Terach was not suffering physically, but Terach was spiritually completely lost. And the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim is not just a story of the emancipation of the slaves. It's a story of the Jewish people being completely foreign to the true belief of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and then being brought to Him. And you have to speak both of the material and of the spiritual when you speak about Golos Mitzrayim. And that those are the two sides presented by Rav and Shmuel. And so He says that Lamaisa, of course, who do we paskin like? Lamaisa, whoever we paskin like, we do like both. Because in the Haggadah we say Avodah Hayinu, and we say Mitzvah the Avodah Zarah Hayu Aviseinu. Both texts are found within the Haggadah. Because if we're just going to speak about Mitzrayim as a material experience of freedom, we will be missing a great part of the point. Why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu take us out? So we would serve Him. And of course, if we just speak about the spiritual, and we don't recognize the physical component of what happened here, is we're going to be missing something as well, because the great benefit and the great physical benefit and our sense of being meshubad of was a gift of spirituality. It's not a bond of spirituality. Avodah Mayinu L'Farah B'Mitzrayim says we owe HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We owe Hashem big time. Not time to discuss it now, but one of the things which I think is very fundamental is if you look, you will see that really this division between Rav and Shmuel is the division between whether we're trying to make us understand why we have to serve Hashem or whether we're trying to make us understand that we should be inspired to want to serve Hashem. The parsha of Avodim Hayinu is a parsha in the Torah in Vayeschanan, and over there it's clear that we're saying you have no choice but, right? It's the question of the Chacham there. What are all these things that Hashem instructed us? And you tell him, we were slaves to Paro, and Hashem took us out from there, and He brought us here, and He instructed us to do these things, which basically means, we were slaves to Paro, Hashem freed us, but that means that now we owe Him big time. And you know how the verse ends? It ends, Utstoka Tielanu, and you know what? It'll be a tztaka for us when we do all of these mitzvahs. What does it mean it's a tztaka for us? Right? So you look there, the Ramban, the Ibn Ezra, they say, Hashem doesn't owe us anything. Because when we do these things, it's because we have to. Tell me something. If you are a slave, which was bought, but was bought by a master, and you do your work, he has to pay you? He doesn't pay you. He owns you. He doesn't pay you. But you should know, Hashem, He's nice. He's going to reward us, even though He doesn't have to. But the statement of Avodah Mayinu is explaining why it is that we, of all people, are obliged to do the mitzvahs. And that is because Hashem gave us our freedom. And He gave us our freedom, He has certain expectations in return. And that's something which is supposed to come out of Yitzias Mitzrayim. Anoichi Hashem Elokecha Asher Yitzisicha Meretz Mitzrayim Beis Avodim, says Rashi, that was the first word Hashem tells at Har Sinai. He said, I took you out of slavery, you owe me. The passage of Mitchila Avodah Zarah Avoseinu, which we use as Be'eva Anor Yosho Yosechim, is from Sefer Yehoshua. Look at it, it's an amazing thing. It's at the end of Sefer Yehoshua. Yeshua is about to die, the last chapter. He says, Jews, I'm dying, I'm going on, I just want you guys to make a decision. Which God would you like to serve? Would you like to serve the God of the Canaanim over here, the God of the Mitzrim, or would you like to serve Hashem? And he tells the whole story. He says, once upon a time, our forefathers, by the Avodah Zarah, Hashem brought us close. He tells the whole story of the Jewish people, except he leaves out a couple of things. He says, Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim. It was unbelievable. But He never is maschil bignus. He never says, we were slaves in Egypt. He just says, Hashem, Yaakov went down to Mitzrayim, and then Hashem brought terrible plagues upon the Egyptians. Why? He says the whole history of the Jewish people, and leaves out one little story. What's the story? Matan Torah. He says, now that I told you the story, tell me, do you want to serve Hashem or not? So the Ralbag says that they had no choice. Well, what was he talking about? Yeshua knew they had no choice. But he wanted to pretend as if they had a choice. So he leaves out Matan Torah. He leaves out the fact that we were slaves to Paro and Mitzrayim. And he says, listen to this story of how Hashem took care of you. Are you interested in serving Him? Because he knew that an inspired choice has certain advantages over a forced choice. And so he pretended as if we had all the choices in the world. And that's Mitchila Ivde Avedizar HaAviseinu, de-emphasizing the slavery, the fact that we have to, and trying to inspire us to say that we should want, we might want to, the spiritual attraction, the greatness of being able to be with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And it's an amazing thing, because when the Jewish people first respond to Yeshua's request, they say, heaven forbid, how could we not serve Hashem? After all, he took us out of Mitzrayim, mi beis avedim. They say it. And Yeshua says, no. You know, don't you realize how hard it is to serve Hashem? And then the second they say, no, we want to serve Hashem. And then he accepts it, because he wanted to see if they were inspired. And that's the story. The night of Pesach is a night from which we're supposed to draw inspiration, said Rav. Yetzias Mitzrayim is an incredibly inspiring story. Shmuel says it's very nice to be inspired. But today is March 10th. Last night we changed the clock. Okay? Yet, we had a full minyan for the first minyan and a full minyan for the second minyan. Why? Because people were inspired to come to davening? I would venture to say in most cases that was not why. In most cases it was why, because people felt and understand that as Jews we have an obligation to daven. Inspiration is great, and if you're lucky it comes once a week. Obligation is what keeps you doing temidim kesidran, is what keeps you consistent. And so Shmuel says, you know, it's good to learn from Mitzrayim, obligation, routine. In the end, it's good to learn from Mitzrayim both. And in the Haggadah we make sure we learn our responsibilities, and we also derive inspiration. And that's what Rav and Shmuel bring to the table. It's beautiful if you take a chance to look at the, again, the passage on which Rav is based, the last chapter of Yehoshua. The passage on which Shmuel is based, I think Perek Hei and Devarim, Vaschanan, whatever it is, over there, Perek Vav. Look at it, and you'll see, Mamish, that it's two different conversations. Not just different historical frameworks, not just spirituality, physicality. One is inspiration, and one is obligation. Okay, next week, and the week following, I don't know, because next week I'm not assuming we next week is very busy with kashering and Shiras Chametz.